just maybe, my tardiness is a byproduct of my solidarity with International Workers of the World Day. So let's just say it, you know. We get to speak reality into existence, right? We get to, you know, perception is reality. Ask the universe for it. We create our own reality through our mentalities. You know, all that nonsense we tell, all the lies we tell ourselves. So I'll run with that. So in solidarity with the International Workers of the World, I decided to say, hey, I'm going to get here when I get here because I am a sovereign, autonomous being. I am not just a consumer. I am not just a human resources. I am a man. But now I was just running late because I had to drop my son off, which normally I don't have to do on Monday mornings. And I didn't make the extra time. But hey, so be it. It is May Day, International Workers of the World Day, which is a major holiday everywhere around the world except the United States. United States has Labor Day, but Labor Day has completely been stripped of all of its historical and political meaning. Whereas May Day is strictly, and what's ironic, not only was May Day founded, started, began, originated in the United States, It started right here in the city of Chicago. In fact, not too far from where I'm broadcasting from, the Haymarket riot, Haymarket uprising. And so it's rather a testament to the effectiveness of mass indoctrination and the de-education system, the dumbing down of U.S. citizens, the fact that people are in the United States are totally unaware of the radical roots of May Day and the overall labor movement in the United States. So, what is it? Oh, okay, sorry. Anyway, so, you know, here's my thing. Because I think I was once a member of a labor union. And it kind of shook me to my core. I was a member of the 1199 union in New York City. You know, it was after I went to college and got my first little, you know, sheet of paper deeming me worthy of, you know, above starvation wages and deeming me worthy of a title and status, you know, and I started working at a job that had a labor union. I've worked a few union jobs, and one thing that none of the unions I've ever worked for, or none of the unionized work stations that I work for, is they taught nothing, absolutely nothing of labor history. There was absolutely no awareness of where it came from. And the absolute and the mission of labor, the mission of the labor movement has been totally diluted. And so a lot of people in this country, even members of labor unions, even progressive, even some radicals, truly think that the prosperity that workers enjoy, the middle class, that's the only class that exists. You know, and by the way, a side note, you know, when you get off the exit at 94 in Madison, there was a small homeless encampment there, and it's all cleared away. Did they go, did the city, did the police, you know, Chicago's defenders, preservers, and protectors, go and take these people's tents and mattresses and their little resources? You know, I just saw that this morning. And last time I was on that exit was Friday, and the little homeless encampment was there. But then I come, and it's completely, like, literally hosed away, like, completely stripped. Not one, you know, not even one, you know, sandwich wrapper. Everything's gone. So I will be looking into that, but who knows? What can you do? Anyway, a lot of U.S. workers think that their prosperity is a product of capitalism. They think that the United States is wealthy because of capitalism. And not only is the United States wealthy because of capitalism, but U.S. workers are able to buy these iPhones, iPhone 5, iPhone 6, iPhone 7, iPhone 7.2, iPhone 7.5, iPhone 7 case, you know, bedazzled case, you know. and iPhones, wireless head, all this wonderful Apple technology that y'all got. I ain't got nothing from Apple. Because, you know, I mean, beyond the logo, but and to have these nice clothes and these nice shoes and to be able to have a passport and travel the world and, you know, go to Jamaica and totally bypass all the poverty of Jamaica, the exploitation of Jamaica, and go on these Jamaican resorts and for a weekend, even though you're a member of the working class, you can act, pretend, live like you're a member of the elite class. How they live every day, you can maybe live a week and a half, a year. You know, and they really think all of this is a byproduct. Thank God for capitalism. Thank God that there is a system of competition where there is this holy, untouchable, sacred thing called profit, where you can generate profit and where you can set up and work and you can get profit, not earnings, not wages, but profit. And they really attribute all of this to capitalism. But if you know anything about the U.S. history, everything that the working class people enjoy, which in this society is over 90% of the population, everything that we enjoy in terms of our livelihoods, our rights, is a direct result of socialism and socialistic policies, of we got it in spite of capitalism, not because of capitalism. But people are really ignorant. And they really worship people like Bill Gates, Donald Trump, you know, Michael Jordan, Oprah Winfrey. They really, Beyonce and Jay-Z, they really think that these people themselves have done, they themselves personally have earned $1 billion. They've done $1 billion worth of work, or they've made $1 billion worth of contributions to the rest of humanity. Now, somehow their work is so much more valuable than the McDonald's worker, the trash man, the nanny, the school teacher. What they contribute to the larger society is worth so much more. But I tell you this, if all the basketball players that we pay so much money to chase balls, if none of the basketball players showed up for work for a full year, you might have some, you know, mindless people who will be like upset. But I tell you, most of life will continue. And not only will life continue if none of the ball chasers showed up for work, life would even continue at the rate and at the quality that it was before the ball chasers stopped working for a full year. I guarantee you. I promise you. And not just professional ball chasers. If the NBA... And the college basketball players say, forget it, we're not chasing balls for a full season. We're just going to go. Every ball chaser that is anywhere above your neighborhood basketball court, your neighborhood pickup game, anybody that's playing officially with referees and uniforms, even high school, college, junior college, Division I, whatever, all that mess, all that irrelevant, that was so obscenely irrelevant mess, the minor league basketball, whatever, overseas, if all of the ball chasers stop chasing ball for a year, even though you might be sad, oh my God, even if you're a fan of basketball, unless you're have some type of, you know, neurosis, some type of psychotic condition in your head, you would be able to go about your life. But I tell you this, if all of the nurses took a year off, and we know this, why? Because there was an NBA lockout. There was a whole season of no basketball, and you had some people hemming and hawing and chucking and bucking, but ultimately they went, they fried their chicken, they slept, they worked, they loved their families, and they went about their lives. And, you know, instead of being able to discuss what ball chaser had what stats, what ball chaser did what on the ball field, they just talked about the fact that they were all the lockout. Yeah, these players want too much money. Blah, blah. They still even got a chance to discuss sports. They just discussed the lack of sports instead of the actions of sports. And so they were still able to have their extremely irrelevant discussions. So we know that for a fact that life would continue. The sun would continue to shine. The water will continue to run. The schools will continue to open the doors to mass indoctrinate your children. Everything would essentially go as it was. So it's not that valuable. It's entertainment, but it's not the only source of entertainment. And in fact, it doesn't even deny you, because you can go to, I mean, in my neighborhood, two blocks away, there's a basketball court. There's a beautiful basketball court right on the beach. If I really need that, my little injection of ball chasing, if I'm really addicted to the sport, I can go watch the kids in the neighborhood play, or heaven forbid, pick up a ball and chase it myself. So we know that. But if the same thing happened with the nurses, as opposed to every ball chaser in America say no ball chasing, if every nurse in the United States say I ain't nursing, CNA, LPN, RNs, whatever, nurse practitioners, if all the nurses put their hands up and took a step back for one day, forget a year, there would be more calamity if the nurses took one day off than if the basketball players took a 4-year off. But look at the disparity in play. And let's look, the trash collectors. If the trash collectors took a week off, there would be pestilence. There would be overrun by vermin and sickness, communicable diseases. The water system would become even more contaminated than it is. Our air would be more contaminated, respiratory infections. If the trash men took a week off, 1 week would be more cataclysmic to society than if the ball chasers took a year off, if the ball chasers took 10 years off. And I could go on down the line. The food service workers. Just the food service workers. And not even just the wait staff or the back room, the cooks. I mean, the people that stack your lemons at the grocery cart, that hose down and maintain the grocery store. If they took 2 days off, and what about the people, even lowest people on the agricultural food chain, are the migrant farm workers, the migrant workers who pick the strawberries, who pick the grapes, you know, and they're trying to mechanize this, but there's still a large amount of human input. The people that work at the silo, the granaries, the people who work those disgusting pus field, chemical field, rat infested slaughterhouses, those animal concentration camps for mass murder of animals, if they took a day off. So people obviously aren't paid according to what they contribute to society, because how do we measure what people contribute to the society if not by, if they stop doing what they're doing, how would it affect my day-to-day life? The guys that go down in the sewer, if the sewage workers stop working for a day, right? The public transit workers, if they took a day off. And I'm not saying, I greatly value artists, people who sing, people who paint, people who chase balls and have athletic abilities that are almost superhuman. I do value them. I appreciate them. And I consume the work of artists. And it brings value to my life. But please tell me why Michael Jordan chasing a ball is worth $1 billion, while somebody who's harvesting the food to feed my family, work ain't worth enough for him to provide shelter and food for his own family. United States, in the United States and around the world, agriculture workers have some of the highest rates of malnutrition of any workers in the world. How are the people who pick the food suffering from malnutrition? But what sense does that make? So I'm not asking for total depravity and to take everything from the ball chasers. All I'm looking for is just some rationality to the system. We like to think, because multinational corporations, they take scientific products like computers and jet planes and engines. They take these things. We like to think that, hey, this economy is obviously scientific. They have these complex algorithms that can make a billion trades a second. This is a scientific industry. Just because it uses technology does not make it rational. It does not make it ethical, does not even make it functional. This system makes no rational sense. But if you start to question it, you're going to lose your job, whatever you are in the hierarchy. And if you might be in a hierarchy, you might not be nowhere near the top, but you're not at the bottom either. So some people are like, hey, I will take the lunacy. I can't remember some, you know, writer, F. Scott Fitzgerald, one of those weirdos from the mid last century, where he said it's very hard to get a man to understand something when his livelihood is based on him not understanding it. So we try to rationalize. Anybody, any billionaire in this society, anywhere in the world, is a parasite. Is a parasite, is an absolute drag on the system. If every billionaire was gone tomorrow, the world would be a better place. It would be a better place. And could you say, if you were to think, if every poor person was gone tomorrow? Actually, no, because you'd be surprised. There are a lot of working poor people. A lot of your great grandparents, a lot of your grandparents, or a lot of your parents wouldn't be cared for. There'd be nobody to care for them, to give them their therapy. Because, hell, you'd be gone. A lot of these people that sit here, I got a car, I got me a college degree, I got a mortgage. So, yeah, let's get rid of all the poor people. And then you look up, the poor people police is at your door because your ass is poor, because poverty ain't about what you got. It ain't just about your little superficial material. What assets do you control? What resources do you control? You don't even know where you exist on the class strata. You don't know that you two paychecks away from being on the corner at that poor man you despise so much that's begging for money. Why don't he get a job? So you don't even know where your class. You like to think a lot of people, they ask people. One time my wife had a class, and she asked the classroom, how many people in here are poor? Of course, no one raised their hands except my wife. Except my wife. She's the only one who raised her hand. And then she said, okay, lucky y'all. Very lucky. She said, how many of y'all are working class? She said, maybe one hand went up. And then she said, how many are middle class? Every hand went up in the class. Every single hand went up in the class. And then she asked, how many of you in here are wealthy? No hands. And then you got like stratification, because you got rich, and then extremely rich, hyper rich, uber rich, and then infinite rich. You know, it's even classifications in that. So then she basically started giving them the breakdown of class. What makes you rich? And just to be middle class in the United States, you need a household income. Income. If you're a single person, you need a basic income of $100,000. And that's just regular income. Right? And if you want to have a wife and a kid, one kid, you need $350,000 in income to be middle class. And even if you got children out there, a lot of brothers, you ain't say, I lie, a lot of brothers go out. I got some homies that do this. You got a kid, maybe two, three kids, about five, six different women. Right? But you say, I'm single. Don't tell that lie. Don't ever say, I don't care what your marital certificate says. I don't care what box you can check on the application. Your ass ain't single. I don't care what the official standing status is between you and the woman you inseminated. Your ass ain't single. And sisters, don't believe it. Don't believe it. I see sisters do that somewhat too. But they a little less. You be like, hey, baby, what's your status? And she's like, look, I got kids. So just before we go any further, I got a kid. You know, so that's what I hear. And this is all through the grapevine. You know, I've been out the game for almost 20 years. But I'm just saying, would I be looking at y'all from a distance in y'all little entanglements? So entertaining to me. So, you know, dude, you ain't single. You ain't single. Even when your child hit 18 and you done paid off the rears and you done got your final dispensation letter saying you were free from obligation of child support, whatever, you still ain't single. Even when that, because when that, you know, when you got an 18, 9, I know homies who got kids that are adults. They still your kids. So you are not walking this walk of life by yourself. You know. So just so you know. And, you know, some of y'all, so let me not get down that rabbit hole. But I just got to say, I look at some of these relationships. I look at some of these relationships, right? And I think to myself, how did they even get along long enough to make the thing happen? You know, these people are so hateful towards each other. Like, what happened? Were y'all both out on a rainy day? And it was just some freak accident. She slipped in the puddle and then you slipped in the puddle and then your clothes, you know. I don't know what happened because it couldn't have been y'all had enough time where y'all weren't hateful towards each other to do the birds and the bees, you know, to be clenching your butt cheeks with each other. I'm just saying, it's just crazy to me. Like, how can you be so fake? I wonder if, I just wonder. And I wonder, and you know, if I could ever get to that state with the mother of my children, where you just got that guttural hate, you know, that you just can't even say her name without your you know, snarling. You know, and I'm always, I'm a good loyal friend. Some people who believe in astrology say because Scorpios are fiercely loyal. Of course, I totally reject astrology. I don't think it has any scientific basis, but I am a loyal person. I don't think it's because of the moon I was born under or whatever that nonsense. This is just, I just think that's rational to be loyal to people. So I am a good friend and I do have my homies confide in me and they just hate the mother of their children. Like, how did y'all even get to the point where you had your point pointing at her stuff? I mean, how did y'all even get along? Did y'all converse? Did you know who you was impregnating when you was impregnating? What? I don't know. But then things, you know, things fall apart. I mean, even if things fall apart, do they have to? I mean, no, things ain't fell. Things have disintegrated, have been itemized, have been obliterated. Not just, I don't know. I don't know. Y'all, I think people should get counseling. I don't know. It's just wild to me. Some of these relationship dudes be hating on their mom, baby mamas. Now, I don't have, like, women have never confided in me about baby. So I only know the man's perspective, which is the only perspective that matters, right? I don't know how y'all do. Y'all have to tell me, man. I ask them like, you don't know. That's the thing they tell me a lot. Man, you don't even know. I was like, I admit that I don't know. That's why I asked you. What's the problem? Oh, dog, you don't even know, man. You don't know. I'm like, yes, I know I don't know. I acknowledge that I don't know. So since you're sharing, since you brought it up, since you over here ripping at my pillows, why don't you just tell me so that I can know? Because it's just out of pure curiosity. Dog, you don't know, dog. If you knew. And so I start to think, man, I think he doesn't want to say, point out specifically what she did, because maybe it wouldn't sound as bad. So just telling me I don't know and just take his, you know, word for it that she's the worst being in the world. I don't know. To me, but what about the babies? It's all about the babies, right? And then we got that new thing. I take care of my kids. And then, you know, those tabloid shows where the dude comes out on stage like, I take care of my kids. And everybody claps. So why do I care? Why would I clap for you taking care of your kids? I don't even want to clap that I take care of my kids. And I don't even want to clap for that. You know, like, I don't want to clap for myself doing that. Like, why would I? Yeah. Woo. What the hell does that mean? I wipe myself after I defecate. Oh, wow. Woo, you're a big boy. Good boy. Doing basic stuff, you know. Antelope take care of their kids. Who cares? Rats take care of their kids. It's not really an accomplishment. Now, if you come on stage like, I care for all the kids in my community. I set up and I organize and I work with and I provide aids to children that I'll never see. I send resources and support to children across on the other side of the world, Indonesia and Singapore. You know, Somalia, I'm helping kids in Somalia. Then I'm like, whoa, oh, I applaud you. Yes, yes, clap, 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 clap. Then I'll applaud. But just your own kids? You know, you're the kids that carry your chromosome? That's the selfish gene. That's just that's like saying I take care of myself. You know, who cares? That's nothing to applaud. I mean, it's not even that admirable. And maybe if you come up with some technique for caring for your children, some idea on how to rear your children in such a way no one else thought of, and then you write it down. Look, this is if you got a kid, don't want to study, don't want to keep their room clean, doesn't want to do this or that. You know, this is a technique that I've developed to get my little child to act like they got some sense. Then maybe like, oh, thank you for sharing your insights about child rearing that can inform my own child rearing. Maybe then. But just taking basic care, food, clothes, shelter, and tending to their emotional and cognitive development. Stop clapping for that, people. Stop cheering for that. Stop cheering for that. Okay. Like, look, you know, that's grown folks' business. That's just basic stuff. You know, we need to stop praising adults for being adults. Just baseline adulthood. Anyway, back to Mia, dear. Back to Lieba. All right, so talking about how we value labor. Ball chasers can make millions. Singers, dancers make millions. Poets, literary writers can be anywhere from impoverished and homeless to millionaires. There's no rationality in this system, but they say they try to act as though the market determines who gets paid what. That's called market fundamental. But wait, let me finish off the thing. My wife's students, and of course she teaches at the graduate level. She's taught everything from middle school all the way up to PhD students and everything in between. I don't think she ever taught. Well, she did had a brief stint of teaching smaller children, but she ran up out of there. They ran her up like, you ain't about this life. So she doesn't teach the grade school. So middle school all the way up to PhD. So these are some of her grad or post-grad students. You know, people who's supposed to know something. And turns out, just about everybody in the classroom would have classified as lower, working class, lower poverty. Actually, everybody would have qualified as poor if you went strictly by the numbers. And there's some other non-qualifier things, you know, the quality of food, because I'm poor, you know, but I eat a vegan organic diet. I got, you know, I'm used to the finer things, as poor as I am. You know, but I don't have a nice car. I don't have expensive clothes. I don't have disposable income, you know. I don't jet set across the world, but there are some of the finer things. Literature, I like to read, and I do things that upper class people, that are associated with upper class people, because when poor people like me do it, nobody sees it, nobody really acknowledges it. You know, I have some degrees, you know, I've traveled a little. So, you know, there it's not a strict hard line, but if you went strictly off the numbers, which is what matters to most people, you know, if you meet someone and they're not going to ask you, so, what book are you currently reading? They want to know, what do you do for a living? And the only reason they want to know what you do for a living, because that gives them some gauge and say how much money you make, because you can't go straight to say how much money you make, how much money you got in your pocket, break yourself, fool, which is the reality. You walk up in a woman in a club, but I guess y'all don't even meet in the club now. You don't walk up on somebody in the club, you swipe them on your phone. So I guess that's another way to gauge. That's why everybody balls out on the internet, because you're getting swiped. Or whatever, they're looking you up on the internet and they can see your pictures and you'd be like, hey, look at me. I'm standing here with my arm around 50 Cent. See, I know 50 Cent. Like, even though, you know, it could be a wax statue of 50 Cent, or you could have just ran into 50 Cent at his concert or some book signing or movie premiere. But hey, I ball out. I hang out with people like 50 Cent. You know, it's not like you on 50 Cent is at your house on your couch, or you're not at 50 Cent's house on his couch. But hey, I know 50 Cent. And hey, look at me. Here I am in Jamaica, which suggests I may have a passport, which suggests I have enough money to buy a plane. Hey, here's me with standing in front of a Mercedes. Do I own the Mercedes? I don't know. But people take these kind of pictures to suggest that their lives are wonderful. And I'm not saying that your life ain't wonderful. I'm not suggesting that. But and I wish, if there was a God, I'd pray to her and say, I wish everybody's life was as wonderful as it appears to be on social media. I'd wish that for all of you. That's probably the greatest gift you could give someone. But I think it's all about money. But you can't just come out and say, you can't just post your pay stub, because it's tacky. We're not there yet. We're getting there. We're rapidly getting there. We've got a whole class of women who are like, the first thing I want to know is your credit score. Which means, brother, if you're standing there and your credit score is maybe, you know, 230, rock bottom, and you stand next to Jason Voorhees, who has a 785 credit score, And she gonna walk up and caress his machete and 780, because that's the funny. You are your FICO score. But it's just tacky. So people still want to pretend as though they care about your job, just to know what kind of, want to get to know you as a person. Which, because as we said Saturday, if you ain't got money, you're broken. You're broken. They don't want a broke nigga. Broke nigga. And the un-nigger, they said, the unemployed, uninsured, uneducated. Now, despite, you know, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump, they were all non-un dudes, but they're mass killers. You know, they're sociopaths, if you ask me. But, hey, that again, that's my judgment. That's my diagnosis. But so it's long story short, that's how we value. That's how we measure each other. But you have to know that that's not a rational measurement. How much you're paid is not how much value you are. How much money you make has no direct correlation to the value of your labor to the society, the value of your work to the society, the value of your work to your community. How much you get paid has no direct correlation to your value as a person. Donald Trump, I wouldn't pay half a broke penny for him. He's worthless to me, a worthless sack of protoplasm and orange spray tan. But he's worth a billion. And there are people that I know personally, historically and contemporary, like Malcolm X, didn't have nothing. But to me, he was a priceless individual, and his contributions, not just to black folks, but to humanity as a whole. Priceless. Immeasurable. So there's no logic in this value thing. There's no real, makes no sense. And how much money you get paid is arbitrary as hell. There was a time when actors and actresses, you know, I used to do a lot of Shakespearean theater. That just was hot. When I first started acting, I used to do a lot of theater. And for some reason, everybody wanted to do Shakespeare. This is in the early 90s. Everybody, Shakespeare, no matter where you get, everybody wanted to do, and maybe that was just saying, hey, you know, it was a renaissance or a renaissance, I don't know. But anyway, as I did the plays, and there would be some indirect historical correlation, I'm just like, wow, you know, this is interesting. Let me read about Shakespearean era. And it's like, well, nobody really knows who Shakespeare was. It could have been a collective of writers, and it was all these interesting tidbits. But one major thing about Shakespeare was that I learned is that acting was not a noble profession. Actors did not make a lot of money. They were like carnival barkers. Even the great ones, even the Shakespearean, they would go travel from town to town, set up, do their work. They were like vendors. They didn't make very money. And if you wanted to upset or crush the spirit of your parents, say, hey, I want to be a performer. I want to be an actor or an actress. Oh, no, you're going to live a life of poverty. Now actors and actresses are royalty. They're royalty. The Smiths, you ain't even got to act good. I don't think Will or Jada Pinkett Smith act very well. But Will is very good at carrying out instructions from the higher ups. But that's another discussion. 6 degrees. Anyway. So they're royalty now. So and I'm saying that to say, same thing with athletes. Athletes were always admired, but they weren't always considered to be the most elite. They weren't, their work wasn't considered to be that valuable. They weren't paid that much, you know. And then we have some actors and actresses that still don't get, like porn actress. If you're a pornographic actress, which seems like you work a lot harder than, you know, a dramatic actress. Just for me, a porn actress can do 60 films in one day, where a major actress might do one or two movies a year. But yet, so it's still arbitrary. It's still no real sense to it. It still doesn't make sense. But we treat it like it's gospel. We'll see, look at the tabloids in the grocery store. We'll look at wealthy people and be like, of course. Well, of course Oprah should have $1 billion. Of course. Look at how hard she works sitting across the couch talking to Julia Roberts, telling her she's a beautiful woman. I guess that's some hard ass work. If Julia Roberts was sitting here and they were like, with a straight face, you have to tell her she's a beautiful woman. And it has to be sincere. Yeah, y'all gonna have to give me about, you know, $400-500 million. Julia Roberts, you're just so, you're so beautiful. I guess, yeah. Okay, yeah. Let's take Oprah off the list. Because she sat across from Julia Roberts and like, you're just so beautiful. Oh my God. I just, oh, you're so beautiful. You know, that's a skill that I lack, to be able to tell that lie. And then I think Oprah believes it. So be able to convince myself of that lie and then spew that lie to the world. Yes, Oprah. You get the Oscar, $1 billion, a Tony Award, and whatever little statues white folks can construct for you. Because you are able, you are queen, whitey ego booster. If you can say that, Julia Roberts, most beautiful woman. It's like, you know, just her face is, I ain't even going to start riding on Julia Roberts. Hey, you know, it seems like just the connective tissue in her skin is not the most aggressive connective tissue holding things together the best they could. I know your skin, but hey, you know what? People had different tastes. Eye to behold, skin deep, all that other cliche stuff about beauty. Let me not, because I don't want no feminists, but how dare you be objectified, Julia Roberts? She's our class enemy, so, because she's in that up. She is truly wealthy. She is truly rich. She is truly upper class. And all the way back to my wife's classroom, she had to break it to all these people who should have known, who just spent, after high school, have spent, what, 4, 5, 6, 7 years in school after high school, all educated, degree, letters before and after their name. They should have known. And you don't know if you poor or not. And also, if you make $100,000 a year, but if your debts, your student debt, your credit card debt, eat that up, then you still don't get to play in that sandbox of the middle class or upper classes. And this wasn't even an economics course, but she had to tell you, you know, and a lot of them had taken economics at the graduate level and didn't even know, you're poor, you're poor, you're poor, you're all poor. But hey, I drive a car. I own a house. I have this piece of paper and I have these credit cards. How can I be poor? And quote the great, you know, Jehovah Jay Rivera. I really wish Jay-Z could have met Che Guevara. I wish he had met Che Guevara when he had on his Che t-shirt and his, remember he had his red, black, and green wristband and he had his, 5% Nation 7-star crescent moon chain on. Remember Jay-Z was in doing conscious cosplay? I mean, Che would have shot him right in his gut. Just put Jay Guevara in revolutionary era Cuba. Put him in Bolivia. Put him in Angola or Cuba or the Congo. Put him anywhere where the guerrilla warriors were when he was talking that mess. He'd have got shot in his gut. Anyway, she had to tell all these young people, you're poor. And you don't even know it because there's no class analysis. There's no class consciousness. Devoid. You get some of the most educated people in the U.S. devoid of class consciousness, devoid of class analysis. So on this May Day, this is an opportunity to review labor history, to tell the masses of the people capitalism is not the source of your wealth. Everything you enjoy about life, your children not working in a coal mine, your children not having to work in a textile mill, the fact that you don't have to, that your boss can't force you to work 16 hours in a day. The fact that you, when you go to work, they have to set it, your work site up so the fact that you're not inhaling toxic chemicals, so that the place where you work is not spewing toxic chemicals into your community. The fact that your employer can't beat you, can't rape you, you know, can't come to your house. And yes, this used to happen. When women had jobs, their employers could come to their house if they were a single woman and make sure that they weren't engaging in salacious actions. Used to be if you were a female worker, your employer could impose a curfew on you. If you work for me, any women, single women, unmarried women that is not under the jurisdiction of a husband or living under the roof of her father, if you're a single working woman, then I'm going to impose an 8 p.m. curfew on you. After work, when you get off work, look it up. You know, I mean, probably the labor chapter, the best, shortest, most condensed labor history is People's History of the United States. Very, very comprehensive, but very condensed history of labor. Because I know maybe labor history is a little boring to some people. You know, even though there were machine guns and axe handles and assassinations and bombings. Labor history in the United States is buck wild. And you don't even look because, and it's also a little interesting because what's happened here in the United States, what's being undermined here in the United States, there are other places that are going through what the U.S. had already been through. Because the other industrialized nations, that's the thing why these other worker movements are having so much trouble getting off the ground in Colombia, throughout Africa. The working people can't because the elites, the parasites, the billionaire parasites from Warren Buffett on down to Michael Jordan, they've already been through this war. They know how to fight. They lost the labor war in the United States. The capitalists lost the labor war. They lost. How do you know they lost? Because like I said, there's no child labor. They can't fire you. If you're injured on the job, they have to give you some compensation. And on down the line, we have unions here. It's like we may have lost the United States and Western Europe. We lost in Australia. We lost in Canada. We lost. Okay. But we're not going to lose in the Caribbean. We're not going to lose in Central America. We're not going to lose in South America. We're not going to lose in Africa. We're not going to lose in China, throughout Asia, you know, the island nations, the Indonesian, you know, archipelago, India. We're not going to lose. And they took the experience of losing here in the States. And the only reason they're outsourcing jobs from the United States right now is because they lost the labor war. So they're going to win the labor peace. Remember what I said about these capitalists and these white supremacists, these white aggressors, white dominators. Remember, if they lose the war, they go about to work to win the peace. Now, I know I'm kind of all over the place. Talking about your baby mamas. Talking about who values labor. Now, to me, I don't really mind some people getting a little more. I don't mind people that have more than me. I really don't. But I do have an intrinsic and internal and rational hostility to people who have an enormous amount more than me. Who have a whole lot more than me. Because one thing we never pay attention to, we always like to admire people who get wealth. We believe that lie about Ice Cube used to drive a hoopty through the hood with a crime record like Charles Manson. But he was actually middle class. Two-parent household. Very stable. Good parents. The Jacksons. O'Shea Jackson's parents. They didn't deserve him going out there lying on them like as though the father didn't exist and the mother was on crack. So, you know. The same thing. Remember the Jay-Z. Jay-Z came up from Marcy. I'm from Marcy. I am Brooklyn. The streets of Brooklyn. He said that he hasn't even touched his rap money yet. He's still spending his drug money. He's still spending the money he made in 88 from selling crack cocaine to our relatives, our family members in Brooklyn, the borough he loved so much that he helped to contaminate, helped the CIA contaminate with drugs. So that they could have this longer agenda of gentrification, which he's also been a key factor in helping to gentrify, ethnically cleanse Brooklyn, New York. Bringing that ball field there, tearing down affordable housing to build up housing for the elites and build up, you know, corporate outlets. Long story, but they're lying. But forget it. Let's go with the lie. Before Ice Cube got a record deal, he was riding around Compton in a hoopty. Killing people. Jay-Z was running through Marcy Projects, pushing, selling all the crack. Let's believe these lies. And we admire that. Like, oh, thank goodness. They wrapped their way out of the ghetto. Now, and we like to see the rise, how people go from nothing to something, how people make a little something. Even though people talk all this mess about player hating, nobody's more admired within the black community than somebody who made something of themselves, who got out the hood, right? But here's the thing, what I never hear people talk about. What does it take? We know what it takes to gain wealth. You sling a crack rock, or you got a wicked jump shot, you know, or you got bars. You know, we know what it takes to get out the hood. Or you might, you know, sit down and focus in school. And then you go out and develop a marketable skill that you could sell to a multinational corporation or to the government to sustain the oppressive system that had you impoverished in the first place. Fine, we know what it takes to get wealth. But what we don't never hear people talk about is what it takes to sustain wealth. Beyonce's great talent, got her money. Yes, but how does she sustain money? Because if Beyonce is really good at this, she's going to make more money off of the money than she will make off of her singing. Yeah, you make a little money singing, but that's just seed capital to make real money. Same thing. Michael Jordan got his seed money chasing balls, but he's made more money off the ball field than he did ever made chasing balls. So how do they maintain wealth? Forget making wealth. Okay, it's not that hard. You scratch a lottery ticket, instant wealth. You know, there's different ways to get wealth, but it's not that complex. But we never discuss what it takes to sustain wealth. And I'll tell you, what it takes to sustain your wealth and to grow your wealth once you got it is the hyper-exploitation of everybody else in the world. The mass slaughter in the Congo, the starvation in Somalia, you know, the disruption and subversion of the Sudanese government, the dropping of mother of all bombs in Afghanistan, the genocidal war and contamination of the entire Middle East, mainly Iraq and Yemen, North Africa, the hyper exploitation of mass murder of women, the maquiladoras in Mexico, the sweatshops of India, the child labor in Borneo. You know, the destructions of ecosystems all over the world, the sweatshops of China, the mass execution and illegal organ trade coming out of China and Israel, the small weapons trade out of Israel, the large weapons trade out of the U.S., the Saudi Arabian monarchy. And their brutal regime of beheading and murder and torture, the Catholic Church. And their global multi-centuries pedophile ring, same thing with the Protestant churches, and the same thing with the Quranic schools. All of this madness and exploitation is how you sustain your wealth. These corporations like Bechtel, Halliburton, Raytheon, Jay-Z, who else? Name anybody. Name any of these celebrities whom you don't associate with weapons manufacturing, with sweatshops. They take their money and they hand it over to these investors, and they put their money in all these little pots of hyper exploitation and destruction, destroying ecosystems and destroying people's lives. That's how you sustain wealth across the board. And if you want to do what's right with your money will not grow. And then we say, why don't they come to the hood and open up a business? Because ain't no money in opening a business in the hood. There's money in it, but there's no profit. Now, I can sustain myself. If I want to open a business in the hood, if I want to employ people in the hood and have what's better than in a living wage, to hell, have co-ownership, cooperative ownership, yes, I can have a house. Yes, I can maybe get one car for my whole family. Yes, maybe I could take a vacation, go see the relatives, you know, maybe once or twice a year. But I'm not going to have private jet. I'm not going to have a 1,500-foot yacht with a helicopter pad on. I'm not going to have diamonds, jewels, and rubies. You know, I'm not going to be able to live in castles. I'm not going to buy a $120 million bulletproof mansion messing around with building businesses in the black community. That ain't where the money is. This is a third world situation. You don't build in the community. You dump cheap goods, consumables in the community. You extract from the community. You don't build up the community. If you want to get rich, you got to extract and exploit the black community, not build it up. You got to play the game that's played. You got to roll the dice on the monopoly board. So even if we admire, hey, they came from nothing, in order to stay from nothing, unless we fundamentally transform this system, that's the reality of the system. And you're either with it or you're against it. Ain't no halfway. Ain't no such thing as halfway capitalist. That's it. So there's really no reason for us to continue to admire anybody, any black. And then people come to me, oh, you just don't like success. You're right. I'm anti-success. If success means the hyper-exploitation of everybody else. And they already exposed Beyonce, feminist icon. And she's got women in the third world. Where was it? Where was her sweatshop? Making her Ivy Park clothing. Exploited women. Those women, they found out this is what a feminist looks like. Those $50 feminist T-shirts, promotional fundraiser T-shirts, found out those were made by women subjected to sexual harassment, no labor standards, no environmental standards, paid starvation wages without any level of protection. So it goes down the line. Oprah Winfrey, if you got $1 billion, if you got $1 million, your money gets spread around. People with those kind of resources, millions and millions of dollars, don't put their money in a little savings account like we do and then peck away at it until the next check come. Jay-Z just stood up and said, I want to be a venture capitalist. And black people are like, wow, Jay-Z is just a model for our children. He went from the drug game to the rap game, and now he's up there with the big white boys. He's not, but let's pretend. It's fun to pretend. Do you know what venture capitalists do? Look at what Puerto Rico is going through right now. That's venture capitalism. Destroying the life, starving children to death so you can get what? What more do you need? You and your wife together are worth $1 billion. How many more dollars you got to throw on top of that pile? Another 6 million? What do you want? That's pathological to me. That's crazy. The only billionaire that I know of, there, I'm sure there are others, but I mean, that got a name, J.K. Rowling, the author of what do you call it? Harry Potter. She's made over $1 billion, but she's not a billionaire because she's like, what am I supposed to do with all this? Give it away now. Redistribute the wealth. But we can't depend on the benevolence of any particular billionaire. We should take their money. It ain't their money anyway. It just said you don't make money. Jordan ain't never glued together a pair of ugly ass Jordans. Those shoes are ugly as sin. I don't give a. Jordans are so damn ugly. He ain't never glued. You take Jordan and his dad jeans. You fly him to Indonesia. You take him down to Haiti. Ain't even got to take him that far. Put him on a boat. Take him to Haiti. Say, here's a Nike factory. Take your ass in there and make a pair of Nikes. You making all this money off of Nikes. Take your ass in there and walk out here with one pair of Nikes. Jordan, look at you like you crazy. He don't deserve to make that money. He don't. It's parasitism. And we admire these people because they have money for no other reason. And I would hope Trump's election will show you that billionaires are not necessarily intelligent, not necessarily hardworking, not necessarily capable people. They're just like us, except they got money. And the system, the number one way to make money is to manipulate public policy and taxation policy, economic policy of this society. That's how you get big money. Just look at the billionaires. The people are getting richer and richer. The billionaires of today are richer than the billionaires of 40 years ago. Why? Because they're smarter? No. One reason. They have embedded themselves in the political system and they're getting favorable taxation and economic policies. They're able to do away with certain regulations and impose other regulations. They're able to shunt the tax burden. It's all manipulation. It's all swindling. None of it's from hard work. To quote Boots Riley, the communist rapper, later for that pull up your bootstraps tactics, because hard work got me to the chiropractic. You know, and also one thing they've done, they've taken labor history and they've taken class analysis out of the classroom. You ask anybody in America, after the devil, fictional devil, who's the worst person in the world? They won't even say Hitler. They'll say Karl Marx, if they even know who Karl Marx is at this point. It used to be Satan, Karl Marx, Hitler. But you have to go back to somebody who went to school in the 80s when they even bothered to tell you who was wrong and who was right. Now they just don't tell you nothing. You know, now they tell you nothing. You ask them who Marx is. They'd be like, oh, the Marx Brothers, weren't they a comedy team or something? Nobody even knows. They don't even have to lie about who Marx was because people don't even have the capacity to care. But anyway, way past the musical break because I got started late. But hey, it's all gravy, baby. But we do need a third world working class revolution, y'all. And I send this song, shout out to King Dita, co-host with the most. Ever since, you know, he posted a video of his little cheering, his little progeny dancing to this song. And now it's been in my mind ever since. So I was like, as soon as I go back on air, I got to blast this for the people then. Peter Tosh, African. And he said Peter Tosh is better than Marley. I mean, he's just so blasphemous. I mean, I'm an atheist too, but there's just certain blasphemy you shouldn't engage in. Bro Diallo Show, AM 1680. We don't care where you come from. As long as you're a black man, you're an African.
Think you where you come from. As long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality. You have got the identity of an African.
Clarendon. And if you come from Portland, and if you come from Westmoreland, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, you have got the identity of an African. Cause if you come from Trinidad, and if you come from Nassau, and if you come from Cuba, you are an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your complexion, there is no rejection, you're an African. Cause if your flexion high, 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 your flexion low, and if your flexion in between, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind denomination, that is only segregation, you're an African. Cause if you go to the Catholic, you're an African. And if you go to the Methodist, you're an African. And if you go to the Church of God, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, I've got the identity of an African. Cause if you come from Brixton, you're an African. And if you come from Wednesday, you're an African. And if you come from Wednesday, you're an African. And if you come from Bronx, you're an African. And if you come from Brooklyn, you're an African. And if you come from Queens, you're an African. And if you come from Manhattan, you're an African. And if you come from Canada, you're an African. And if you come from Miami, you're an African. And if you come from Switzerland.
dreadlock, cop hip hop. Make your head bob, bounce to this socialist movement. My environment made me the I am. Uncle Sam came and got me and the rest of my fam. Try to infiltrate and murder off the best of my clan. I'm not American, punk, Democrat, or Republican. Remember that. Most of the cats we know be hustling. My mama worked all her life and still struggling. I blame it on the government and say it on the radio. And if you don't already know, all these Uncle Tom kissing got to go. Got to go. Got to go.
Me don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you are an African. Bro Diallo Show, AM 1680. You can call me live on the air, 312-985-7834. Now, on this May Day, let's talk about potential for workers' revolution rebellion uprising. Can we have a workers' rebellion uprising? Well, the problem is there's no workers' consciousness. You can't, if you ain't got class consciousness, if you don't know something, you can't do something. So it's all about the consciousness. And there's very, 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 very low class consciousness in the United States. And the problem is throughout the world, you don't have this dilemma of class consciousness. But the problem is outside of the United States, they're under the nuclear umbrella. They are under the nuclear umbrella. And because of the intensive propaganda and indoctrination, when things start to fall, they don't fall to the left, they fall to the right. But that's a whole nother discussion. I might have to talk. Yeah, let's Wednesday. We're going to have to talk about the right turn of the world. World turning right. Because this is happening. That whole never again is happening yet again. That's what they should have said. After Hitler, after the fascists, the Italians, they should have said yet again, because the theme coming out of the conclusion of World War, so-called World War II, I might one day might have to revisit my breakdown. There's been about 7 world wars, but they only count 2 world wars because those were the world wars where white folks did the most of the dying. And if mostly Africans, Asians, Natives, Americans, Aboriginals, if they do the most of the dying, no matter how many millions of them died, then it's not a world war. How many white people died? Maybe a few white mercenaries? Well, a few white agents? A few white provocateurs die? But if it ain't white folks in Madison, white civilians dying, then it's not a war worth mentioning. But after the World War era, they said, never again. It should have been yet again. Yet again. White tribalism. Now, white tribalism is, again, driving the world. We don't call it tribalism because, you know, they're white people. Can't use such disparaging terms. Now, if Africans killing and fighting and bickering wholesale, setting up global conflicts, then that would be tribalism, just primitive beast acting out their nature. But when white folks do it, it's not primitive, it's not beast, and it's not their nature. It's an anomaly, even though they've been in perpetual war since the 1400s. When they go to war, it's some kind of necessary, benevolent thing or some type of freak anomaly. So tomorrow we'll deal with the right-wing shift of the entire Western world. Not that it ever went left. It wasn't even century. It was always right-wing. But now, you know, it's even harder, farther right. Anyway, beyond that, let's keep it moving with workers of the world uniting. Now, there are countries all over the world where your homeboy Obama, the labor movement in Honduras, Venezuela, Colombia, Brazil, that Obama crushed. And the United States government can act with absolute impunity outside of its borders. Because there's really no nation, including the UN, no group of nations or no individual nations that are insane enough or have the military might or the economic might to hold the United States to account, to force the United States of America to obey international law. So the United States acts with impunity outside of its own borders. And for the most part, it acts with impunity within its own border, especially when they're acting against the state comes against black people. Total impunity and complete immunity. But they subvert workers' uprising. But the workers in those lands, at the very least, understand they don't walk around thinking they're middle class. They don't walk around thinking they're members of a class that they're not members of. They don't walk around in absolute awe and adoration of the parasites who extract their life, their human resources from them. But they don't have. So in the United States, Canada, Western Europe, like I said, Australia, where the people are in the belly of the empire. They are not victims of imperialisms. They're more so benefactors than victims, right? Here, it's very hard because there's no class consciousness. Or as Ernest Hemingway says, poor people think they're just temporarily embarrassed millionaires. Every American thinks they're one good idea, one good investment, you know, one, you know, killer app away from joining the upper class. And so you have people, even though like the inheritance tax, which Trump just is trying to eliminate with his budget priorities. And he might just get that the destruction of the inheritance tax. The inheritance tax only affects less than 5% of the total population. So you would think it's 5% against the inheritance tax and 95% in favor of it. No. It's about 50-50. And in fact, more and more people are coming out. In fact, well, I say it's more than 50 because even though the raw numbers, I mean, politically, since this is red state, the Republican Party is the number one enemy of the inheritance tax and they dominate the country. It's not just the federal government. The United States, the Republican Party control the Supreme Court, executive branch, presidency, and the Congress, both houses of Congress, the House and Senate. And they control well over half of the state senatorships, state governors, all red. Just look at the breakdown. This is a red country. Red, red, redder than red. So, the majority of the people are either indifferent or support the inheritance tax, even though it's not a tax that affects them at all. In fact, it's a tax that actually favors the majority of people. Because the 95%, at the very least, it's an impotent way, but it is a way of leveling things economically, of preventing too much wealth, of concentrating in too few hands, which gives you a situation of a third world status. You know, when you go to other third world countries, whether it's a dictatorship or a democracy, it doesn't matter what they say it is. The reality is oligarchs rule the day. Oligarchs move the country. And these are the people, a few people with the most resources. The few, when you concentrate wealth in too few hands, that's the government that was overthrown. That was the issue. That's why they were decapitating monarchs all over Western Europe. The Reign of Terror. Because too few people had too much stuff. And then no matter how much money the Federal Reserve bangs out, there's still a finite amount of resources. You know, it's a finite. So it can be inflation. There's only so many resources. So if you don't distribute the resources equitably and justly, then you're going to create a severe imbalance, an imbalance of power, an imbalance of health, an imbalance of mobility and all of that. So the inheritance tax was one way to say, hey, we're not just going to have generations of families getting richer and richer and having more and more power. But we're going to say, hey, if someone wants to come from the bottom, start from the bottom and get their way up, then they're not going to run into a wall of saying, hey, people who inherited their wealth will have more opportunities, more power, more everything than you. So you don't have any opportunities. So these families, essentially become monarchs. Which was the whole damn point of the American Revolution, was to get out from under the power of monarchs. So just take something like the inheritance tax. People who will never have a chance in hell of ever being rich enough to pay the inheritance tax still want it taken down because everybody in America thinks they're one good idea, one dope rhyme, one jump shot, one layup, one slam dunk away from being millionaires themselves. Even though the United States, of all the westernized developed nation, has the highest level of social and class rigidity, which basically means the class you're born into, for the most part, is the class you will die in. That you can, let's say, my mom and dad did not have high school diplomas. Neither of my parents have high school diplomas. My sister, she has special training. She went on to, I hope she's not listening, what do they call it? Like get her beautician license. And then she got her thing where she can teach other people, where she can certify other beauticians. So she went on to get, you know, vocational technical training. My younger brother has a college degree. I think he's working on his master's and PhD now. And myself, I have a master's degree. And for both, all three of my mother's children, all of my mother's children, none of our parents had high school diplomas. So you can call that, yeah, that's an elevation. But as far as class, none of us have elevated beyond their basic class limitation. Yes, we do have a little more than our parents, but we haven't exited the class standing of our parents. We're still in the lower working class rung. Right? And even if we did start to get more money because we work with our rest of our family and we want to spread the resources, we might elevate, but we don't get completely out of the class. Me and my siblings are still very likely to die within the class, not even two or three steps up from the class that our parents lived in. Because when our parents, you could have a good paying job with a good wage, buy a home without a high school diploma. You can go down to the shipyard. You can go down to the docks. You can go to the refinery. There's all kind of jobs. You can strip and bluff floors. You can park and wreck. You can be like my dad. He's a contractor and a painter. And there were jobs with living wages because of the struggle against capitalism and capitalists. So in the 70s, when our parents entered the workforce, there was still opportunity. So even though what my dad was able to do as a high school dropout and a felon and an ex-offender, what he was able to accomplish now, back then in the 70s, I need a master's degree to do what he did without a high school diploma. So even though, you know, so they, as Mos Def said, when we start keeping pace, they were like, oh, elevate, you want to elevate, get a college degree. Okay, we'll just cut the legs out from a college degree. A college degree won't bring you the income that it used to. Because we're not going to give up our power. We're not going to give our standing. And we're not going to look you eye to eye as peers. And even in the era of chattel slavery, they were like, let's have a nigger with a mansion. Let's have a nigger with a little petticoat and a nice little carriage just to parade in front of the other. This little novelty, this little statistic anomaly. And we look at the statistic anomalies now. The Oprah Winfrey's like, they're the standard. And we really think she just worked harder than us. And she's so much smarter than us. And if you ever watch the Oprah Winfrey show, I've never seen such journalistic incompetence. She would say such absurd things. She's not a good journalist. Her analysis and insights are not that deep. Now, she might be a very gifted performer. Yeah, she's a great actress. But as far as her main bread and butter, the Oprah Winfrey Show was supposed to be a show about information, getting information out to people, sharing insights. At least that's what I thought it was. She'd have neo-Nazis and skinheads on there and doing breakdowns of that kind of stuff. She was always so inaccurate. I mean, Phil Donahue was a million times better for that type of format. Phil Donahue was probably the best whole talk show format where he would have real. He had Dr. Go and look up Dr. Khalid Muhammad on Phil Donahue. Go search that and watch that video and tell me any show that Oprah Winfrey ever put on that was of that quality in terms of the insight, in terms of the engagement. And it still had the entertainment value. It still had the Jerry Springer element to it. So that ain't that. But anyway, let's get back to consciousness. First thing we have to do, and I'm sick of conscious people tripping off of non-conscious people. You go to a basketball game. You go anywhere the so-called unconscious people gather. You go to a church. You go to a mosque. I know some of y'all think Muslim blacks are conscious. So, but if you think that they ain't, if you know that they ain't, that they ain't no better than the Christian and anybody else play to an alien God. But you go to church, you go to a mosque, you go to a frat house, you go to a Mary Kay meeting, you go to any place you think unconscious black people are. Now, there are conscious black people everywhere, actually. But anywhere as a conscious black person, you go anywhere where they gather to handle their business, whether it's to run their kids' little league games or their corporate offices. One thing you will not find them discussing is what conscious people are or are not doing. They won't sit there and be like, oh, these conscious people, how are we going to do this? How are we going to get the conscious people to come on board and believe in Jesus Christ? The conscious blacks, the revolutionary blacks, the Pan-African blacks, the black nationalist black folks don't believe in our God. So how can we spread the word of Christianity, build a new church, and get up to some more Christianing? And do all the sick, silly stuff we do in the name of Christ? How are we going to do it? Because we don't have the support of the conscious revolutionary black people. They don't say that. No gathering of unconscious black folks who have not seen the value or committed their lives, talent, and resources to the liberation of our people, to the empowerment of our people, they don't trip off of us. But then when you go to a gathering of conscious black folks, all they want to talk about is everybody who ain't there. Our people are so blind. Our people are unaware. Our people are spending money on Jordans. Our women are spending money on weaves, acrylic nails. And our men are wasting their time and sagging their pants. And I'm like, but okay, ain't nobody in here doing that. So we've got half a dozen people, 2 dozen people, 100 people in this room right now. That's what we got to work with. What can 100 people do to advance the whole community? There's something that could be done. There's something one person could do. I'm a walk out, and when I'm out in the street in my community, I'm picking up every piece of trash I can. And I'm going to put it in a reciprocal. One man revolution. I'm going to take whatever money I earn, and I'm going to open a very small business, and I'm going to sell health and wellness products to my people. I'm going to educate my people. I'm going to give away books. I mean, there's a lot of things one people can do. One person can do. Then you got two people, that doubles your impact. Three people, triples your impact. I'm not going to get into higher numbers. That's too much math. But you get my point. I'm really sick of going to the gatherings of conscious black people and hearing y'all talk about unconscious black people. If you're going to bring up what everybody, black people, and even people come on social media. Yeah, black folks ain't going to. I'll make a statement and someone will come and say, ain't nobody going to understand this. Ain't nobody going to read it. I'm like, did you read it? Then you and I could have a discourse. You and I could build on this issue. Just me and you. And the rest of the world can do what the rest of the world doing. That's the thing I try to impress upon conscious black folks. Even you think when Bill Gates sits across from Warren Buffett and they talk about how they're going to further exploit the world and hand the world over to his little kids. I ain't gonna call them a name. Do you think they say, well, we're trying to rule the world as white men, wealthy white men. We're trying to rule over the world and maintain our hold, our hegemony over the world. But them white people in the trailer parks, all they want to do is drink Pabst Blue Ribbon, watch wrestling, and shoot guns, making the whole race look bad. No, they don't trip. They don't trip off of what I've never heard. Even Oprah got before the world and said she can't help the black community because black kids want Jordans and value Jordans and sneakers more than books. And Bill Gates says, hey, I think these are the skills and values that young people should have. I'm going to build schools. I'm going to fund schools. I'm going to advocate. I'm going to finance documentaries. If the people aren't thinking what I want them to think, then I will start a media propaganda campaign to change their minds, to have them thinking what I think they should think. But no. Oprah says, I'll go build a molestation compound in South Africa, call it a boarding school. Don't hear about it much. She don't brag about that school much. Look into it. Not a good thing. Not a good look, Oprah. But Oprah can do no wrong because she's rich. Now, if I had built a school, if I had a little home school or daycare and children were, you know, scandal after scandal, I'd be locked up. Oprah does it. Yeah. Just a pet project. Push it. Brush it under the rug. So first thing towards workers uprising is for the people who are already committed. Now, there should always be a program for outreach, community education, community engagement, all of that. But for the specific agenda, carrying out the specific agenda outside of the outreach, trying to bring people on, you start where you are, work with what you got. If you got three people on deck, then that's your revolution. That's your guerrilla army. That's your think tank. Those are your funders, your fundraisers, your workforce. That's everything. And you come up with a viable agenda that three people can carry out. And then when somebody come up and like, yo, what y'all up to? What y'all getting into? Oh, that's noble. I want to contribute. And then you bring that person on board. And then you just start what in the medical, they say it starts to metastasize. It starts to infect other people. And believe you me, there is a time where we could sit around. You know, they call us hoteps. They call us crazy niggas, want to be Africans, want to be Black Panthers. They talk. So, yeah, I'm not saying don't take your time to make fun of them either and poke fun. Yeah, that's human nature. You want to, you know, posse up with your group, stand back to back and point fingers as they point fingers at us. But that shouldn't be the core of our work. I say anytime we have a meeting, take 3 minutes to talk about what everybody ain't doing. Talk about, oh, ain't no unity, we ain't unified, we as a people. Talk all that nonsense about everybody who ain't at the meeting. But then, after the first 3 minutes, the whole rest of the time in the meeting, you only talk about what the people who are present are willing and capable of doing. That's it. That's the only topic at hand. We ain't going to talk about how ignorant people are. We ain't going to talk about who's shooting, who got shot, and how these niggas ain't do. No more. When we come together, as the conscious people, as the proletariat, as the revolutionary faction, as the vanguard of the people, we only talk about what can be done. We don't talk about what ain't being done or what nobody will do. And here's another rule. Since it's May Day, this is the time of workers' rebellions, of uprising people from the bottom, going at the throats of the people at the top. Unity. Don't ever call for or mention that we need unity. If you're in a gathering of people, the only thing you can say about unity is say, hey, everybody, listen to me. I stand to offer unity. I have this much time, this much money. I have these particular skills. Who has need of them? Who can make use of them? I offer unity. Don't talk about what we need. Talk about what you have available. Say, I got 2 days a week. I got $30 a week that I can put up. I got $30, $300. I got a $3,000 a month. And I know how to do carpentry. I know how to do gardening. I know how to do analysis. You know, I know how to do media analysis. I know how to paint. I'm a really good dancer. I can write poems. I can play the guitar. These are the things. These are the skills. This is the time. And these are the resources that I have. I have a pickup truck. I have a lawnmower that I can have access to on the weekends only. During the week, it's being used. These are the resources. This is the unity I have to offer. Don't call for unity. Offer it. And if everybody in the meeting says, wow, we really appreciate that, but we ain't nothing we can do with that, then that's not the meeting you should be in. If they don't have any use, if they don't know how to put your what the unity you offer to use, then you don't complain about it. You go find a group or build a group that can make use of your time, talent, and resources. This is the age of refinement, just like this is the age of intensification. Our enemies are intensifying. They're butt naked. They're not pretending not to be racist. They're not pretending not to be ecocidal. They're not pretending to be anything but what they are. So we might as well stop playing too. We're in what they call the Anthropocene. This is the world made by man. Carbon in the atmosphere is over 400 parts per million. We've got mega storms. We've got crop failures. We've got freaking right-wing, bloodthirsty, well-armed racist in government, in the systems and seats of power. All right, so it's time for us to get serious. It's time for us to refine and intensify our efforts. That's all I'm saying, yo. So just follow those two rules. Those are just two rules. I'm going to come with more. Number one, shut up about what people ain't doing. Just talk about what you and your people got. And if it's just you by yourself, then you don't need to be talking about anybody because, you can't attract one person. You can't find and build a functional relationship with one other person. Even if it's your wife, if you and your wife are the only two members of your revolutionary organization, you way ahead of the game. You, your wife, and your half a kid that, you know, your baby mama's oldest son, whatever. That's your organization for now. So figure out a plan and an agenda that y'all can carry out. And then you will build the larger agenda and the larger, this is the ultimate goal. This is where we are in that goal. That's number one. Stop tripping off of what these Uncle Toms. And believe you me, nobody loves to mock and point fingers at new Negroes, Uncle Tom, Sambo, Coons, all down the line. Yes. Spooks. Yes. by all means, that's part of the rhetoric. That's part of the propaganda. That's part of the media. You got to advocate for your positions and invalidate your enemy's position. You got to build yourself up. At the same time, you have to take down your opposition. That is a strategy and tactic for organization and conflict. Yes. But when you're sitting in the boardroom, that's not the time for that. When you're saying, hey, we're developing the strategy, we're executing the strategy, we're reworking, evaluating, and advancing the strategy, you ain't got to talk about the Coons and Toms because they shouldn't be there at the table. They shouldn't be at the room. They shouldn't even know the meeting's happening. So save that time for bumping heads with Coons when it's time to bump heads with Coons. And number two. Right? Number two. Stop with this mystifying, idealizing consciousness. And no, unity. Don't ask for unity, offer unity. And let's not be unity, this thing floating in space. Let's say, hey, time, resources, talents on deck. That's unity. Offering up your time, telling specific times, the specific resources, and the specific skills that you're giving up. Offer unity. And if nobody says, hey, that's wonderful, let's take it and run with it, then find another group or build a group from the ground up, like I'm doing, African World Coalition. This is Bro Diallo Show. Thanks again for listening. Happy May Day. When you get to work, go to your boss and say, I'll cut your throat. Give me more money. Give everybody more money. And relinquish your power and influence over me. Ownership of the means of production. Go read the Communist Manifesto to your children for bedtime tonight for this May Day 2017. Bro Diallo Show, Q4 Radio, AM 1680, broadcasting out of the sanctuary hypocrisy that is the city of Chicago. Peace. Oh, and hey, if you do go tell your boss to cut your throat, don't tie that back to you.